This episode is brought to you by our generous sponsor, Kobold Press.
The Tome of Beasts 2 from Kobold Press brings nearly 400 new monsters to 5th edition, designed by some of the most talented and wildly creative designers working today.
Pick up Tome of Beasts 2 today at critacademy.com/KoboldPress. Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
Thanks for joining us today here at Crit Academy Studios, where everything's made up and your roles don't matter.
That's right. Your roles are like a warlock without a pact. You kind of need those.
Wait, then wouldn't you just be like a sorcerer or something?
Or a wizard.
Or a wizard. Isn't the whole point of you being a warlock because of the fact you have a pact?
Yeah. That's where your magic comes from.
Yeah.
So then what the fuck are you?
Not a warlock.
Not a warlock. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Anyways, we're really excited for today's show. We're going to be discussing Kobold Bress's Warlock Grimoire 2.
So there's the first one.
Yeah, there is a first one. So I'm really excited to talk about that. It's basically a compilation of their Warlock magazines with a lot of new stuff in it that's not been released on their magazine. So that's exciting.
I just want to say immediately that the quality of it is just beautiful.
Yeah. Tickles my dice.
Mm-hmm. Like the artwork in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the artwork. It's just all good.
But before all that, we have our Let's Talk About Blank segment, where we talk about a little bit what's going on in the world of tabletop RPGs. If you'd like to follow along, you can head on over to critacademy.com/post/episode194 and follow along. Or if you're listening to this live or recently after it's launched, you can find it as the top of the blog page.
Mm-hmm.
So Polygon just released an exciting new article based on a tweet from Wizards of the Coast, and it says, finding a regular game of Dungeons & Dragons can really be a challenge, even under normal circumstances. And even now, it's harder, right? Because people can't go anywhere, you know?
Global pandemic, yeah. You know, yeah. Tends to put a little damper
on it, right? Yeah. So Wizards of the Coast is moving its organized play program online. On October 21st, the publishers announced that D&D Virtual Play Weekends, a series of monthly ticketed events, starts on November 13th and extend through March 2021.
So a while.
Yeah.
That's about a good 5 months. Yeah.
If you don't know what their organized play is, it's basically their Adventures League, where it all takes place in a consistent story. So you can play at different locations in different games and still have the same kind of story going on, and it's a cohesive overarching story. Usually it leads into like a book or something, or is right after one,
or as ties to one. Yeah.
So that's always exciting. It is worth noting that these entries aren't free. Is an entry starts at about $4 for beginners and tops out at $15 for a standard 4-hour session.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people will have a problem with this, but honestly I think it's a good idea, and I'll give you my thoughts on that in a minute. But
I mean, you got to pay for the service, got to pay for the DM's time.
Yeah, so. and the amount of effort. These are supposed to be, you know, they get vetted and all that stuff, so they're supposed to be good DMs.
Yes.
Now, pulling the strings behind this whole thing is David Christ, founder of Baldwin Games. He's been formally running D&D events for Wizards of the Coast since 2005.
God.
If you've ever played a game at Gen Con or Penny Arcade Expo in the last 15 years, it's likely because of him and his team, which is fantastic because
yes,
it's a lot of work that goes into those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I only put like one or two games together and it's a whole lot of work.
I couldn't even imagine putting in like entire convention full.
Yeah.
Like how the website's called The Yelling Portal.
I love that. We were actually going to touch on that. Oh, so, Baldwin now also handles Wizards of the Coast marquee annual events. So D&D Celebration, which includes organized play for public alongside new product releases and celebrity events, which is phenomenal. Now, why I think this is exciting. Paid service means it's probably not going to get canceled on me.
True.
I'm going to get hopefully a quality experience, and everyone's going to show up.
I mean, if you paid into it, you'd be more invested into it. So, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Less likely to have dropouts. Now, I know some people will have some issues with this, but I do think it warrants you can always play at home with your friends for free if you can get them.
Yes.
If.
But.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with what you're saying in the fact that, like, these are people who... these aren't your friends. I know right. That sounds really strange, but like to put it that way, but they aren't your friends. So these are people that you are actively seeking to take the time out of their day to play a game with you. Right. Yeah. So you should, and it's not like it's, you know, like matchmaking and like
no.
Any video game or anything like that. This is something that, you know, they're like, hey, I can do this. I've been pretty much authorized by
Wizards of the Ghost?
Yeah, so like...
Or at least Baldwin Games.
Yeah, or at least Baldwin Games. And it's just like, hey guys, we can do this. You just have to pay up a little bit. And honestly, like, $15 for 4 hours? Come on.
I paid way more than that when I was seeing a movie.
Yeah.
I mean...
And I spent like $50 on a movie once.
An element, too. I mean, I've gone to some conventions where I have met... And like league events where I've met some not so great players or mm-hmm. DMs, the result and have fun. But I usually find that to be more the exception than the rule, though. Yeah. Cause,
for sure.
Because I do feel like when you're at those kind of events, those present want to be there.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I've been to a lot of conventions. I've ran Adventure League games, and the one thing that I can say about it is you will get to experience a myriad of different play styles from players and dungeon masters, which really made me a better dungeon master.
And I also do think some players and DMs need to realize you will encounter different play styles. They're not better or worse. They're just different. Yeah. And I don't want to say that because I've definitely seen some people react some ways a little bit more stronger than they probably should have in some circumstances. Like, dude, there's nothing wrong with what they're doing. It's just different from what you're used to.
Yeah. When I went to Gen Con a few years ago, I sat at a table and the game style wasn't for me. So when I got signed up and I ended up in the same group, I ended up giving my space to somebody else because it's not that I thought the DM was bad. It just wasn't my jams. It wasn't my focus on play.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's where an ironic weakness of D&D is that it's so diverse and so broad, and you can play it in just so many different ways. Like, you guys could be playing, like, we could be playing, you know, like, a war setting, whereas, like, a completely different group could be playing, like, a crime investigative setting. Mm-hmm. And that just two completely different, you know, like, one's going to have, obviously, way more combat, one's going to have a lot more roleplay and exploration, and...
Or one can even be, like, a Greek epic.
Yeah, or a Greek epic. Like, there's... yeah, there's...
Looking at you, Theros.
Exactly.
I'm so excited for Theros. But, that's... And it's not like it's the game's fault, because that is the inherent weakness of trying to go out to all of these different
branch
audiences.
Those types, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to say that they are looking for DMs. So you could be, if you think you've got the talent and the skill, I think it's on November 2nd, they are opening up submissions. Now, I'm not going to say that you're going to get in, because they're going to vet you and make sure you don't, you know, suck. But if that's something you want to give a shout, give a try to, I think those are paying positions. So if you've wanted to try to pay to play, now's your opportunity. If you can get past the first line of, you know,
the WotC guys,
yeah, or whoever's doing the.
I wonder what process they go through to be a approved DM, if you will.
I don't know. We'll find out. I would like to sign up.
Also, that'd be really fun to put on your resume. Oh yeah. Why should I apply for a management position? I was hired by Wizards of the Coast to be a DM, and I DM'd other players for 3 years, and they look at you like, oh my god, yeah, you're in, you're hired.
Yeah, and we all met regularly, like, excellent at schedules.
Yeah, like,
I manage a hours-long projects each week with a group.
Good to focus on task assessment and problem-solving analysis, so it's great stuff.
And a bunch of statistics, because there is numbers involved.
Oh my gosh. So overall, I'm really excited. This I know this will scratch some players the wrong way, but if you don't like it, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean it really
it's
is
just like a movie. If a movie's coming out and you don't think it's worth your time, don't pay for it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, don't watch it. It's probably not for you then.
I'm excited to see how this goes, because this is, even when the pandemic's over, something like this will still likely be a thing, I think.
I think so as well. It'll still probably be relevant.
All right, I think that'll do it for our Let's Talk About Blank segment, the Dungeons & Dragons announcement of the virtual play weekends.
But before we move on to the main topic, we have a gift to give away by Loresmith, the modular dungeon tiles, specifically the Arcania set. Now, the Arcania dungeon tile set looks to make dark, shadowy dungeon maps rich with the fumes of arcane secrets. Now, your DM could be nice to you, and maybe this DM was great and they gave you a magic item in one of these walls that you were kind of like looking at for a minute. Alternatively, you might have had an actual Adventure League DM and say, it's just a fucking wall, move on. Oh, man.
That's funny. Who's our winner today?
Our winner today is Ace Trooper 55555. Congratulations.
Congratulations to Ace Trooper.
It's 55.
Yeah. Oh, I just
realized that makes
that.
Way
funny.
More sense.
Congratulations. If you didn't win, have no problem. Head on over to critacademy.com/loresmith. Check out all the free loots. I also would like to add that we are going to be releasing Fantastic Terrain 2 soon. So we did a special promotion. You can head on over to critacademy.com and go to our free loot section, and you will actually find a free sample from Fantastic Terrain. That's 7 terrains you can just pick up for free. And if you like it, maybe consider picking up the other one and keep an eye out for the new one. I'm really excited. It was one of our biggest products, and this now it's going to be the biggest sequel that we've had. So, anyways.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Do that. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Alutu, the podcast maker. It's a web app where people can log in on their web browser and then use it to edit and produce their podcast episodes.
It automates the production and publishing and podcasting, and offers a tool to make editing quicker and easier.
Then upload the recordings to Alutu. Then convert all your files and cleans up your volumes, background noise, and hiss. Then pieces it all together and adds your theme music automatically and publishes the episode direct to your podcast host.
The idea behind Alutu is to make podcasting as quick and simple as possible, removing a bunch of the tech barriers and to let you concentrate on the bit you do best, talking about something you love.
Try it out for free over at Alutu.com. That's Alitu.com to get your 1 week free trial.
All right, so moving on to our main topic today, we are discussing Kobold Press's Warlock Grimoire 2.
Oh man,
that's right. There's the first one.
And yeah, there is a first one. I don't have the first one. I just got this one, but I might have to go get it now. So, you know, what exactly is in here? This is.
There's a lot in there, actually.
Yeah.
It's kind of a dark book.
Inside, you'll find, you know, dark fantasy material for the world's, you know, first RPG, Dungeons & Dragons. Within these dusty pages, uncover the secrets of the world, indeed, of the branches of the multiverse.
Ooh.
See, that's the one thing I love about D&D, is even if you're running Kobold Press's material, it could just be a different...
Just a different universe of D&D.
Or, yeah, different. It's a multiverse, right?
I mean, their Midgarth thing is kind of neat, actually, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about it.
So, collected in here are entire lost volumes of esoteric truths. Only for you, the Warlock Grimoire 2. Dark revelations and wondrous testimonials of dark fantasy, monsters, magic, locales, and lore from Midgard. Now, that's just a short, brief description, but there's some pretty dope stuff in here that I thought was pretty cool. Right off the bat, you get, if you like the firearms and the airship type stuff, there's lots of good stuff revolving around that.
Mm-hmm.
Dwarves like to smith together some pretty awesome stuff.
Yes.
They do.
That's how they roll. Mm-hmm. you also got gothic horror and, you know, blood kingdom vampires and some...
God, I love vampires.
Very dark, dark stuff in the Midgard setting by comparison to, like, the high fantasy Forgotten Realms, I think.
Yeah. Like, there's 11 hells, and they tell you who lives there in each lair.
That's cool.
And what rules each one, and there's some pretty bad mamma jammas that tell you
rules. Bad mamma jammas.
But the big thing that I really like about this... is the subclasses. There's a lot, isn't there, Austin?
Yeah, there's actually 10 subclasses. And if that wasn't enough, there's 7 backgrounds, 9 feats, 29 complete NPCs, 2 diseases, 24 spells and invocations, 96 magic items and equipments, 42 monsters, and so much more.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff in here. So, obviously, we can't talk about everything.
God, I wish we could.
Can we just first talk about the layout?
Oh, yeah. The layout is gorgeous.
It's very much the old school style Dungeons & Dragons feel with the black and white art, but it even smells good. Is that weird?
Well, it's a new book, so.
Yeah, it's a new book, so that means
clearly
it's
good. Clearly, I haven't broke it in yet with my new book smell. But it's got all this beautiful black artwork that I'm sure you can't see from here, but.
Oh, yeah.
Which occurs to me now, I probably should have made like a flash screen or something to show these, but.
Well, you know.
It's some good stuff. It's laid out and hits a lot of pages. This has got to be a couple hundred. It's almost 300 pages.
I think it's, yeah.
So that's pretty huge. Apparently, Cobalt Press has a Patreon. I had no idea. One of the last pages.
Wow.
I'll have to do a visit now. Get my own. Maybe that's where I'll get my warlock. So
now it is worth mentioning up front that this is tied into the Midgard setting. So
yes. That being said, you don't necessarily have to use
the Midgard setting.
No.
Yes. Either. Sure that's clear because I use Kobold's monsters all the time, and I don't.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that because it does like mention Tome of Beasts, for example.
Oh, yeah. So when you're talking about like some of the monsters and they reference a lot of the other content, like their cult, their
right,
their Tome of, was
it? Tome of Beasts, the Midgard Player's Guide.
Yeah, all those different things.
But even so, even without those books available, there's still a lot of you to go off of from here. Oh, I just want to be very clear upfront about that.
Yeah. Geez, the artwork looks so good. I just saw one of those like demon looking things and it was awesome.
Yeah, it's hard not to stop and look at each little piece that are made from different people. Anyways, so what we're going to do is we're going to cover a few different aspects of the book, some things that we really, really liked and thought were worth it. If by the end of this sounds like something you want to pick up, please consider using our affiliate link over at CritAcademy.com under the Cobalt Press sponsorship. They are a sponsorship of our show, and they did provide this, so just want to be upfront about that.
No, for sure.
And I think that's cool.
And also, I couldn't be happier about it because I like these guys, so that's cool.
Yeah. Well, right, because I own a bunch of their other books.
That's really nice of them.
A surprise for me to end up getting this one, but. So it was really cool. So what we're going to talk about is a couple of the different things. The very first thing that I noticed about the book, and I think Ian and I were discussing, is that its layout is different. And I think that's because it comes from a compilation of...
That is part of that. They do address that in the introduction.
Of magazines, right?
But, like, we say it that way because, like, there's not necessarily a dedicated background section. Mm-hmm. And even though there is an NPC section, not all the NPCs are there. But that's part of it, too. Like, some of the NPCs are tied to specific areas. So you'll find them in that section. You'll find the magic items from those areas in that section. You'll find, like, feats related to a particular civilization or background in this section for that civilization. Yeah.
So... Yeah. I guess a quick question for the audience, actually. Would this be an entire adventure you could just run? Like, you could just pick this up and just start running adventures with it?
I think you could, actually, because some of the settings they have in there, or locations you can visit, they do give you quite a few details. In fact, that's actually one of the first things I have written down here in the layout right here.
So that's a good segue right into our first one. In our first one, we picked on page 50, there is the Doom in the Pillars. Now, at a glance, what seems to be a majestic city of pillars in the middle of the desert is actually, you know, a withered husk of a fallen civilization infected with a plant-like parasite that spread throughout the city and killed the inhabitants. And wow, that's a lot of chain words together. And people around it have been avoiding for thousands of years.
Oh my goodness, it just kept spiraling. Yeah. It just got worse.
You
love
put
it.
A period there sometimes.
Sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, this it's not really a run-on sense because like it is.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot going on, and it just keeps going. I think that's the intention. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Now,
and I was trying to convince, like, because that's 20 pages into one paragraph. It's like 20,
we only have one paragraph on this, but this is like a 20-page detailed about this area.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it from the side over here, and it's just, oh my goodness.
It's a lot of content. They're, so.
Good on you guys. Holy cow. Like, seriously.
Players may be asked to venture forth for a variety of reasons, such as recover knowledge from the old library, to learn more about a powerful artifact that came from there, Or even learn about the whereabouts of a thought-to-be-lost dragon that still may be alive. And whose rescue may be beneficial. That's interesting. Oh, rescuing goodness. A dragon. Maybe its wings are pinned under something.
Could you imagine? You're like the warden of like some city, and you just see a group of guys. You're like, ah, maybe they could do it. And you just walk up to them and like, hey, got a job for you. And like, oh yeah, yeah. And of course, it's the adventurers, and they're like, oh, well, what kind of job do you got for us? I need you guys to rescue a dragon.
I'm sorry, what?
rescue a dragon. So anyway, there's something that needs to be rescued. You know, maybe you guys aren't the one. I'll see you later.
You don't look buff enough. So there's a lot of different details on the different locations in the area. They give you like this royal library. There's several paragraphs detailing its contents and what.
Royal libraries are always so fun to go through because you can always just throw tons of lore information. Oh, in there. Yeah.
Apparently, there's a Dijin vessel in there too.
Oh God!
It's the predecessor to the Ring of Dijin Summoning.
Oh, that sounds not fun.
That sounds like it might fail.
It sounds like it might kill somebody, yeah.
Yeah, I think you actually have to trap the djinn in there yourself, so.
God.
So instead of coming with a djinn, you got to go capture it.
Oh my goodness.
This is a container to catch one. So it is worth noting that it comes with plot hooks and stuff that you can use to really get a good running start on introducing your characters to the area. This one talks about scavengers have sent word to the Maradi Empire and the Azad, the Red still lives. Huh. That must be the dragon.
That's the dragon.
Ah, see, I figured it out. It also talks about going into the Great Library. It's containing the thoughts of knowledge thought lost to time. So it gives you a variety of different little hooks and details that can really bring an entire adventure or even potentially a campaign all rooted in this location.
See, I love the library aspect because your players could always stumble upon some lore that they're like, we're gonna have to revisit this at some time, and mm-hmm. they'll want to come back and do whatever entailed that adventure, which I'm sure there's tons of. Looking at the size of the book, it's probably something in there that you could do.
Yeah, and they do a pretty good job of intertwining like stuff too. And they give you a little monster stat blocks for some of the stuff, and some of them are unique. Like, this one talks about there being ghasts and banshees and stuff that you would just pull out mm-hmm. of the monster manual. But then you've got, you know, these custom ones that are also things you can toss into it, which is pretty dope.
And have pictures of their own because they're cool.
Yeah.
God, they look good, though, I'm telling you. Very dark fantasy. I like the style. They really tried to sell that this is a... Not high fantasy, not regular fantasy. This is dark fantasy. Like, right. This is... There's going to be a lot of blood. There's going to be a lot of scary stuff. Yeah, beware.
Yeah, to me, I feel like when I like all my books and stuff, I feel like magic is far more prominent mm-hmm. in Midgard than it is in Forgotten Realms at the moment.
But gotta love them Vikings. Was that Alicia?
No, that was the door. Somebody didn't leave it open, or somebody it didn't open all the way, or the wind pushed it open or shut.
That's why it was a wonder. Yep.
Anyways, so overall, this is just one, and there are dozens of these in here, I think.
There might be. There's quite a bit.
Do you remember how many there were of these little locales?
Six or five.
There are five of them, and if each of them are, you know, as big as that one, that's quite a bit of content.
Right, and once they do go into, like, the other civilizations later on in the book, they kind of touch on some things you can probably build off of anyway, too, so.
Okay, very, jeez. Very cool. So that brings us into the next thing. So this actually has a nice table of contents that talks about the lore, the adventuring, and dungeoneering, which gives us the settings and details and stuff. But then there's the monsters. There are a lot of boss monsters in here, and they're just called boss monsters.
That's the section.
It's a section. Boss monsters. Not little weaklings, but meant to be bosses. So they're relatively strong. Which one did you pick, Ian?
Well, because it's Halloween weekend, I went with the Pumpkin King on page 92.
All right. Well, let's take a look.
I'm always down for a Pumpkin King.
Yeah, the art was really awesome, too.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
That's so cool.
Oh, man.
Now, they do give a bit of...
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about it?
The Pumpkin King is a minor fey lord who rules over bountiful harvests, and he can make a region flourish. The Pumpkin King listens for the pleas of desperate farmers and struggling villagers,
And the pumpkin responds to their request by blessing the area for with 10 years of prosperity. What the villagers don't realize is, as part of the deal, at the end of the 10th year, the Pumpkin King comes to collect its price of its share of the harvest with no compassion whatsoever for the locals. It has been even known to destroy entire villages in the process.
He's gonna get his stuff.
Oh, yeah. The Pumpkin King is a CR-10 fae creature, which is vulnerable to fire, resists non-physical damage that's not from actual items or cold iron, immune to a lava effects, for lack of a better phrase, and can cast many plant-based spells such as spike growth, insect plague, and can even entangle a foe at will with one of its four vine attacks that it makes.
Four.
Jesus.
Now.
And it also has advantage against saving throws against spells and other magical effects.
Of course it does. Oh my goodness.
It also has a feature called Harvest Dance.
Yep.
Which basically creates a swirling mass of gourds and vegetables. I can just see every one of my characters be like, this is why I'm not a vegetarian. So I think they did a great job with the flavor aspect of this. All of the spells chosen fit the vine plant sort of theme.
Yeah.
What's really cool is since it gets four attacks, I'm big on grappling. I'm big on shoving. Each one of those is a potential pain in the ass situation for that. So spike growth, if you don't know, if he casts spike growth and starts dragging you through it, you're taking damage. He doesn't even have to attack you.
Yeah, it's just free damage.
So one, if he's got four attacks, in my mind, he's probably can hold on to quite a few different people.
Yeah.
So he can not only grip, let's say he's got only two hands. I mean, in this image, it's hard to tell because he's so many vines. Yeah. But let's say he can hold on to two people. I would still say he can still do two attacks by holding those two people.
Absolutely.
So dragging two people through spiked terrain, thud, 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 and beating in their face with tentacles and choking them and slamming them into the ground. All of that just sounds very fun.
It's a very up close and personal kind of monster, and that's always fun.
I can totally see myself, instead of treating him like a spellcaster, more or less he's using like his body of like vegetables and stuff. So like throwing a gourd that explodes full of insects and just swarming you as him casting the insect plague spell.
Yeah.
Or maybe with the spike growth, he launches his tendrils out into the ground and they just spike up through the ground in all directions.
Yeah, that'd be good. I like that.
Sounds really cool. I mean, it comes with some really great
flavor. I like how it has just
well.
Entangle at will. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. It's the great Pumpkin Charlie Brown indeed.
it was a good monster. My goodness.
The Pumpkin King equals Rob Zombie rewriting Charlie Brown.
Jeez.
And honestly, I don't think this is the best monster in there, but it's the Halloween, so that's why I grabbed it.
Yeah.
How many boss monsters are in here, do you think?
I can tell you if you give me a second here.
Or did we already go through that, actually?
No. Was I don't know, because it goes from page 88 to 113, so a few.
Jeez.
A few.
Well, it says there's 42 monsters, so I wonder if that includes boss monsters, but... Even so, like, that's... If that's one...
I mean, there's a lot in here, though.
Could you imagine throwing, like... three different boss monsters at high level players and they're just all looking at you like, why are you doing this to us?
As me, he likes to play barbarians, why wouldn't you?
Oh no, for sure. I mean me personally, I would love it. I would be just I'd be like, all right, we gotta fight, and then Matt would look at me like, but we could run. I'm like, but we could fight.
But think about the bragging rights.
think about the trophies I could have. Gotta have it.
If this thing's here, was it guarding?
Yeah. And if there's three of these things, there's gotta be something.
So, one of my other favorite things that come with this book is the massive collection of spells.
And they tie some of these spells with, like, particular cultures sometimes, too.
Which, that is cool, by the way. Having different cultures that just have access to certain magic that others don't is very cool.
Yes.
Want to take this one, Austin?
Sure. So we chose the spell Battle Chant, which is on page 176. An example of Dwarven battle magic, this second level ritual enchantment has a cast of 1 minute in a range of 60 feet, with concentration that lasts up to 5 minutes. You can choose to bless all allied creatures of your choice in range until the spell ends. They gain plus one to damage, which is really good.
That adds up.
That adds up very quickly. When you can do it to, I don't know if it has
all
a cap.
All allied creatures of your choice in range. 60 yeah. feet.
That's a lot. Yep. Could you imagine if this was a wartime setting? You're like, I'm just going to give all of these troops right here in 60 feet of me. They can all hurt you more.
I think that's a general idea, too.
Yeah.
Especially behind the flavor.
When used by multiple casters, it increases to 2 damage, and casting the spell at higher levels increases the range. Wow.
So you can reach even more. Now, the very first thing that came to my mind when I saw this is how I can break it. And that was with a sorcerer, because this has got a 1 minute cast time. Well, so can't you speed it up with the...
Yep. Yeah, I did picture it more as like, we're preparing for battle, boys!
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, like they did it with the inspirational leader feat too, right? Where you do it outside of battle. When you go in, you've got a buff.
Yeah.
Can you meta magic that to,
like, what? Because I don't see why not.
Because I feel like there's a limit on meta magic's quickening, but I think it's if 1 minute or less.
I'm checking.
Can you check for me? Because
does it just make it into a bonus action or something?
Something like that.
I know it's something stupid.
But I don't remember if it includes just actions or if it includes 1 minute or less spells as well.
It does say it's a ritual. But I guess
it can be used as a ritual.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. Right.
All
right,
quicken spell. When you cast a spell that has a cast time of one action, you can spend...
Okay, one action.
So it has to be one action.
I'm already
sad. Makes it a bonus action.
I'm sad.
I don't know, but it can be used by multiple casters to increase it to 2 damage, and you can just cast it at a higher level to just increase the range. That's pretty crazy.
I think it's pretty nice just because it is a ritual and doesn't consume spell slots.
Yeah.
That's one of the coolest things that I think
if you cast it as a ritual.
Yeah, yeah. But you would have to cast it for 11 minutes.
Well, 10, right?
Yeah, well, I think it would be 10.
It's 10 minutes. In order to cast something as a ritual, I think you have to add 10 minutes to its normal cast time.
I thought casting as a ritual just made it 10 minutes long.
No, I think it makes a spell 10 minutes longer. You can check and confirm, though. But in either case, that still takes time, but if you've got to wait a minute, you might as well
wait 10 minutes, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Which I think is pretty good.
And like I said, I did view it more as, we're getting ready for battle.
No, for sure.
So I totally want to give this to my kobolds.
Yep, increases the casting time by 10 minutes.
So it would be 11 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
Which really, does that make a difference?
Not really.
It only really matters when it's in like an hour and 10 minutes. Well, that's still an hour and 10 minutes isn't that much longer than an hour.
Yeah.
I like the idea of using this on my monsters. I really do. Like having a leader, like a warlord leader who is buffing them all, before the battle. See, this would be a great opportunity for like a fail condition. Let's say that your characters are invading an enemy territory and they trip an alarm. This would be the difference between them disarming it and
like empowering them.
Yeah, so if you fail to disarm it and you alert them, they're ready, they're buff now. Or right. If you disarm and catch them, you know, flat-footed or surprised or anything, they wouldn't have this buff. That I really like stuff like this for that type of purpose.
Mm-hmm. I like that too. It's good. I like that.
The next thing I think we want to talk about here is the magic items. There are a lot of magic items. The one that we picked today is called the Blood Bow. Why did we pick the Blood Bow?
Well, first off, because there's almost no magical bows in the first place, so any more magical bows, I consider a win!
Agreed.
That's come up on the show a couple different times, that there's just not enough magical bows.
And I'll admit, there actually was one bow in there I liked better, but you had to be from a specific culture and country to even use it in the first place.
So yeah, it was just like a not universal.
That's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
Why don't we have more of those?
Granted, Wizards of the Coast has been pretty on the...
They're trying to make it more open-ended.
Yeah, doing that, but I agree. Like, could you imagine, like, oh, this can only be attuned by a half-orc or someone who is...
Or elves.
Because you got the restrictions for, like, spellcaster or druid or what have you.
Yeah, why not put it as, like, race? Or even, like, I guess maybe even... What about background?
That'd I feel like it was too. More common in the past than it was now, so...
Yeah.
I know I'm reading... I keep saying all the stuff I'm reading, but I'm reading Aragon, and I'm getting through the last one, and there's a certain dwarven tribe that uses a holy... They're like priests, but they use like a holy butterfly sword or staff. It's a staff, but it's got blades on both sides.
Yeah,
there's one other person in the world that uses it, and they hate her for it. Because it is a sacred... thing
oh
that
yeah
she yep. won in like a gamble or something And so she stands out when she fights, not because her fighting style is just unique, but she uses a item that's usually designed only to be used by this group of people.
Yeah.
And so something like that could really add a lot of flavor too, I think.
I agree.
Especially if you like to reflavor weapons.
Maybe we'll have to do more stuff about that when we make like magic items in the future. We'll start incorporating like this can only be used by like elves or something like that. We'll have to think about that for sure.
So what does this blood bow do? Used by female warriors of the Duchy of Perun's daughters. This longbow requires attunement and requires to be bathed in the blood of the enemies of its wielder. That is a cool piece of flavor.
That's pretty fucking badass.
It actually has a straight requirement, and you'll see why.
Its magical abilities affect creatures of the type whose blood the bow has been soaked in last, such as a dragonborn and other humanoids. Oh
okay.
So now, by soaking it in a certain blood, that's how it gets its power. And against that particular type of person. When the blood of the new creature type is soaked into the bow, it immediately changes and it no longer has the previous effects.
On the previous type of creature.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can change the types between long rests, it seems like.
Yeah.
The abilities include a +1 to attacks and damage. And when the attack hits a creature, it fails a dex or a wisdom saving throw. They are enraged and suffer a short-term madness effect until the end of your next turn.
Honestly, why not just take it a step further? Because, you have to bathe it. You pretty much have to get a confirmed kill first, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're fighting the same type of creature a lot.
Yeah, so, I would even make that, a higher DC or, add an extra effect or something. Because, that could be...
Well, you do have two effects going on.
I guess that's... kind of true, yeah, because the +1 to attacks and damage.
Well, that and the enraged and short-term madness.
Oh, it is. Is enraged a thing? Is it just a...
It's just flavor, I think.
Well,
Or is that a condition in their book?
I think enraged basically means they attack the closest creature, so...
I don't know.
Either
way, that's pretty cool. I'll take a look to see if there's any more details.
Yeah,
I'm not seeing that.
But the one thing that I think is cool is playing this feature up as... maybe I become a doctor so I could collect samples of people's bloods.
Or the enrage could be the madness effect.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
It's saying enraged, but it's actually just...
could be. Just gaining
madness. It says they are enraged and suffer the short-term madness effect. So it sounds like it's one thing to me.
Yeah.
But in either case...
I mean, it's a solid effect. I love it. I mean,
the +2 attack and damage is nice already, but...
Well, see, and that's the thing, though. I could see so much use out of this from a roleplay perspective.
Oh, for
sure. Being a doctor who heals people just to collect their blood and stash it on a scarf, and then when you need to fight that type of monster, rubbing on that... I'm sure any DM would let me get away with that.
They'd probably be like, it's got to be fresh or something like that. Or like the blood is old or something. Oh, vials of blood. That could work.
Oh my gosh. What if at the center of the bow is a syringe? So what you're doing is you're stabbing in and you're sucking the blood out.
That's weird. I would like the idea of just, you go to a town, right? And they're like, yeah, you have to fight so-and-so. And you're like... they're like a rogue bandit or something like that. And it's like, oh, do you by chance know who the bandit is personally? And they're like, yeah, he's just like this. No. What is his race? And they're like, what? And I just want to know. He's like, oh, he's a human just like us. Oh,
do you mind if you bleed on this for a moment?
Do you want to take this ceremonial knife and just, just bleed on my bow for a minute? And they just look at you like, I'm sorry? No.
It's part of the price. I'll even give you a discount.
Oh my gosh, you guys are cracking me up. So I can see a lot of roleplay opportunity for something like this. And there, what's funny though, is as much as we just read, there is a whole third of a page dedicated to the description and all that stuff that comes with this item. And a lot of the items have really good descriptions.
Well, man, we need to step our magic item game because man, that was good. That was crazy.
I can do better, I know. All right, so the last thing we want to talk about is one of the 10 archetypes.
Sure.
Austin, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So we chose an archetype here, which is one of 9, I believe. One of 10. 9 or 10, I believe. Which is insane to think about.
Yeah.
It is the Circle of the Everygire. Everygire?
Evergyre.
I said every girl as a thing that came up. So this druid circle feels a kinship of both nature and machine, devoting itself to the wheel and views nature as a cold, emotionless machine constantly moving forward, perpetuating itself, and tries to ensure the survival of the whole instead of the individual, and works with a civilization to live alongside nature and believe technological progress is not something to be hindered.
Sorry. You can put periods occasionally.
I was probably half asleep when I typed these up.
TLDR. This is a druid that focuses on metal, which is awesome.
Clockwork.
Pretty much.
Very cool stuff. So they're often shunned by traditional druids. Kind of obvious, I feel like. I mean, druids are more about the...
nature.
Like, woodsy kind of nature. But these druids focus more on the more mechanical things. Because they're like, well, this is just another step to nature.
It's an extension of it.
Yeah. Which is kind of makes sense.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, they gain unique features as they level, such as access to spells from the deep magic clockwork in the Midgar Hero's Handbook, such as Repair Metal, Gear Barrage, Steam Blast, and Mechanical Union.
Gear Barrage is awesome.
They gain Rust as an added feature from the Contagion spell, which is... That's love cool. it. Yeah, it's very, very cool. Gain the Summon Clockwork Beast Ritual. Can twice per day pull metal from the ground to form a dome, wall, or even bend and reshape metal as with the stone-shaped spell. I believe that's at will.
That's at after, will,
After, I think it's... that's one thick page. Just kidding.
There's a lot of thick pages, actually. Which
at level... Where is it? It says Ore Weaver, but it doesn't say what level. But yes, they can. It is... You bend or shape existing metal as with the stone shape spell. I have to use this feature twice. Okay, so it is a feature. You can only do it twice.
Yeah.
But still, the idea that you basically just became a metal bender from Avatar The Last Airbender is pretty cool. Dope.
Oh, you're wearing plate mail?
Let me just rip that off of you.
I wouldn't rip it off, just crush them like a tin can inside.
Yeah, like that. What would you do as a DM about that? Like, if you just say, like, can I make a melee unarmed attack to like cave their chest in with this metal plate mail?
I'll allow it.
what would you like impose a condition, or what would you do? Like,
I'll worry about that time when it comes, but I'm sure I can make it work.
I'm sure it would.
That'd be the last time you ran into anybody with armor, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's not happening armor. Again.
This guy's got metal armor. Let's change him out for a rogue. Thank you.
Yep. You know, stone shape doesn't actually tell you what happens if you try to crush somebody with it in the first place either.
Well, just blood,
probably because they're just like, probably because the guys at Wizards of the Coast were like, hey guys, what if we did this? Larry, we're not even going to worry about it. We're going to let them worry about it.
That does seem more like their recent philosophy, doesn't it?
They're like, nope, that's not our job. That's theirs.
That's cool.
And they still have a little bit more. So finally, they learn to meld construct features with their wild shape, giving its beast forms a more mechanical nature.
Beast wars, anybody?
Right?
With benefits of having their attacks be considered magical, resistance to magical bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage, and become immune to disease, poison, and the poison condition. So they quite literally just become a metal
monster
beast. Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. Huh. Robots in disguise.
Yeah, they become a transformer.
They also get a companion. I mean,
Are you talking about the clockwork beast?
Yeah. Artificer, eat your head our heart out. These guys can also transform into robot artifice things.
Oh, Lord. What, 14, was it?
Yeah.
16?
Yeah, it's one 14. Of the high yep, levels, 14, yes. 14.
But they do get quite a few benefits of that, too, though, so.
Yeah.
I know for sure. I'm not saying that, you know, they have so much going on.
I think it's so cool that they melded the idea of something that's more of a traditional nature tree-hugging thing to, like,
but what if?
Machinery is a part of the expanse of technology. It works.
Yep.
They're just like, they looked at all the other druids, and one druid was just like, but what if machines were a part of nature? And then they just delved into it.
It's part of the continuum progress is what I would imagine.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which I still think is pretty cool, but I just love the clockwork machine idea. They even have machine speech. What even the hell is that? Is that 10001011?
Yeah, they just start speaking in binary.
That's it.
Now it's basically like, it's attached to, I forgot what the race is called top of my head, like the Soul Forge or something like that, which is basically Midgard version of the Warforge.
Warforge
so.
Stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of cool too. That means they have their own, like, even more unique language that the DM is probably going to scratch their head and be like, how the fuck am I going to use this? But I mean, look, God, the artwork looks incredible.
Yep.
Yeah. It all fits really good. There's just so much here. I mean, 300 pages in this thing.
Yep.
And it's only covers book, and that's the thing though, like, it covers their Warlock magazine 11 through 19, but they also include a bunch of stuff that's not even in those, which I think gives it even more weight than it already had. Can I just say how dope this cover is? I don't know
it's
who this guy
pretty
is.
Pretty awesome cover.
I would say if I envisioned
it'd be a great shelf piece, honestly.
I was gonna say if I envisioned a hex blade, it would look like this.
Oh yeah, I love how
guy looks pretty dope.
Love how much he looks like a vampire. It's just
You go. Let's go back to the blood bow. Drink somebody's blood and then spew it into your bow.
Like, oh my goodness!
You bite them and then bite the bow, and then
cool.
That would be awesome. Oh man, I want to. I want that, and I want a vampire character.
How do you... man? I would love a vampire character. I don't know why
it's they been done. But
they haven't done it yet in 5th edition, have they?
Well,
technically, I think you can if you go by the Mouser Mail.
Yeah, but then you lose your character because you become so powerful.
Unless the DM says you keep him for some reason.
Yeah, but no. I'm not doing it. You're already powerful. Now you're even super powerful. I don't think so. But
you would have to
like
put in some like stipulations or something.
Make all the adventures in the daytime outside.
You can I just say something? I have evidence of this. I have no reason to believe this, but I'm playing the Baldur's Gate 3, and in it you can be a vampire. And I know they worked very closely with Wizards of the Coast when building this. So,
what kind of effects do you get from
that? Tasha's guide to everything, Cauldron, is it Cauldron to Everything?
Cauldron, yeah.
Coming out soon with a plethora of new
classes, archetypes, spells, feats, racial options.
Yes, I wonder if there will be an option for that. Like I said, I have no evidence of this.
Aside from
the game.
The game, yeah.
And there have been revenant characters showing up in Unearthed Arcana in the past, too, mm-hmm. So...
God, I want to play a vampire so bad.
Right? All right, overall, what are your guys' thoughts?
I would love it. I don't know what the price is on it, but I'd buy it regardless.
I think it's, on the back it says the MSRP is $24.99.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's not that bad. No, it's really good.
For how much content's in here? Yeah.
Like, and it's a hardcover.
Okay. I mean,
hardcovers usually run $30, if not more.
You can get it in PDF format, too, which I imagine is a lot cheaper.
And we did say up front, too, that to get the most mileage out of it, it does help to have Kobold Press's other features, mm-hmm. but even without those, I think
it's
you can get...
so much. Yeah. And if you're a lover of dark fantasy, this is a must-have.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. Like, if you don't want to...
Dark fantasy doesn't get much love as it deserves.
It doesn't. Like, if you don't want to play, like, any of the other, like, tabletop dark fantasy RPGs at the moment, you still want to play D&D, but you want that dark fantasy feel, just grab this. Yeah. This is...
It'll help.
It's incredible.
Yep.
We'll have to...
Otherwise, I'll keep playing with it.
Right.
Well, I think that'll do it for our main topic today, the Warlock Grimoire.
I think it's a good overview.
I like the name of it, too. It's like, yes. It's a grimoire, and it makes sense.
Very much a tome of amazing stuff.
Which most Warlocks have, so kudos.
Do Warlocks in 5e use a grimoire, though?
But actually, I think there's an option for one of the archetypes, actually.
I mean, there's the
Book of
Pact of the Chain. Pact of the Book. They have, like, an actual pact book, right?
They do, but I think it's an archetype, isn't it? Or isn't it?
I'm double-checking.
Yeah.
But I know what you're talking about.
I'm pretty sure, because it's Pact of the Blade, Pact of the Chain, and Pact of the Book.
Tome. Pact of the Tome.
Pact of the Tome. Not quite a grimoire, I guess.
It's a grimoire if you say it is.
I mean, pretty much.
This episode has been brought to you by our generous sponsor, Kobold Press. It says it used to be a dragon of the outer darkness.
What does that even mean? Used to be. What is it now? Does anyone else speak Draconic?
It says you are not sufficiently respectful to its dragon's nature. It says... Run?
Run? In this armor?
Excellent. The ground begins to rumble and quake beneath your feet. The Tome of Beasts 2 from Kobold Press brings nearly 400... new monsters to 5th edition, designed by some of the most talented and wildly creative designers working today.
You'll find
monsters for almost every location your heroes might journey. From farmlands to forests, dungeons to deserts, and from bustling cities to fantastical planar realms.
Tome of Beasts 2 brings you a wide range of new monsters from the Angelic Enforcers, Swordbreaker Skeletons, Magma Octopuses, Walled Horrors, and so much more.
Keep your players surprised, entertained, and terrified with the all-new opponents they've never seen before and won't be expecting. Pick up Tome of Beasts 2 today at CritAcademy.com/KoboldPress.
And now, what you've all been waiting for. Our Unearth Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Yeah. Austin, would you like to tell us about our
character concept?
Character concept.
Yeah, absolutely, because the first word I see is Fearbringer. I'm so excited. You needn't wait until the bodies drop to know the victor. Simply find the eyes that glisten with fear. Those are the eyes that won't see victory. Either by physical might or imposing presence or magical means. You combine the perfect aspects to form a dreadful and intimidating presence. You harness these aspects to strike terror into the hearts of your enemy. You shape battles with your will and your fearsome presence. To you, fear is a tool to be wielded like a blade, spell, or hammer. You prefer to start a battle dealing with the weaklings that quiver and shake with terror, cutting them down, blowing them up, or smashing them to bits.
Oh, yeah.
Ah. What do you think?
There are so many directions you can take with this.
Oh, absolutely. The immediate one that I thought of was the Paladin of Conquest.
Okay.
Because it's quite literally about striking fear in your foes, and then when they're stricken with fear, they don't move, and they take psychic damage.
See, that's the...
That's the easy one, though.
Yeah, and that's kind of... And I thought about that originally, and I was like, well, what are some other ways that I could do this?
Yeah.
And I love the idea of a scrawny, weaselly little wizard whose hold spell isn't treated as a... You don't... Mechanically, it's a spell.
Yeah.
But you just treat it as, like... You ever seen...
They're Scared Stiff.
What's... What's... Master Roshi, when he goes from small to really big.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I envision him, like, doing that and buffing up and just freezing somebody for just a second. And then, poof, sink back down to an itty-bitty version of himself.
I was thinking, like, you just, you gave him a sleep paralysis. So, like, they're imagined, like, they can't move. And now they're like, oh, God, I can't move. And they start seeing, like, shadows and stuff all come at him and stuff. That'd be cool.
What came to mind when I read this was a webcomic I saw a while back of Merlin sitting next to like, the Sword in the Stone, giving the whole spiel. Whoever lifts the sword is now king. Only for this massive barbarian walked up, grabbed the sword, lifted it up, pulled the rock out of the ground with the sword still attached to it. I'm king. But she didn't pull the sword out of... I'm king.
And there's a lot of different ways to do this. So the most obvious one's the big burly type of character. But I like where you're going with using magic to create like these tendrils of darkness and fear. Like a necromancer would do something like that, right?
There's actually what made me think of that, honestly, was in Vampire Dark Ages. There's literally like a... You can take like these like traits where they're typically seen as like they're called like boons and banes, I believe, or something along those lines, flaws, boons and flaws. And normally the flaw would be like you always have this like cold presence around you, and you can combine that stuff with like the whole idea was that they have this like darkness magic, and like I created an NPC where like like the cold presence kind of like filled the entire room, and he's just sitting in his throne room like, yes. And then you could see like the pool of shadow grow larger and larger around him. And like, that was the idea and inspiration for it, was he was just this prince who was just like, hey, I'm going to ruin your life. Don't come near me, or I will actually give you a reason to fear everything and anything.
Ow.
And it was a pretty good time.
Sounds like fun.
I'll say.
And that was kind of where, like, the whole fear aspect came in. That's, like, he didn't... See, it wasn't like he looked intimidating. He actually looked way too gorgeous, and that was the issue. Vampire Dark Ages, you can do a lot of fun stuff with things that are supposed to be, like, deficits, but then you can make them work as, like, positives instead if you work them in the right light.
Oh, yeah.
And that was kind of the enjoyment out of that. But in D&D, I mean, you can, like... I'm sure you could probably make a warlock that could be... imposing in many ways. Think like Ganondorf. Like, yeah, you have this very buff warlock who's like, he is imposing, and he's very clearly like, you look at him, he's like, yeah, I don't know, this guy's wielding a greatsword with one hand. I'm not so sure about this one, chief.
His name's the Mountain That Rides.
And same in person, I can see why he's called the Mountain. Because it's a lot of man.
I think that'll do it for our Fear Bringer.
So, moving on to our monster variant, we have the Avian Squire.
The Avian Squires are humanoid-like creatures with the head, legs, and wings of a hawk.
Ooh. Caw-caw.
They hail from the realm of wind and air. While their form can be intimidating, their beautiful feathers and wings give them almost an angelic appeal.
Well, that could be fun to mess
they
with.
They carry magical lances known as wind lances. The Avian Squires command the wind into a small controlled cyclone that takes the shape of an extended lance.
I like that because that means you could mess with the player saying like, oh, it looks like an angel.
So, how do we get this bad boy? The origin is you're going to use the Pegasus stat block. You're going to drop the hooves, the celestial, and it becomes a humanoid. You're going to give it some new features. You're going to give it the dive attack, which if the Avian Squire is flying and dives at least 30 feet straight towards a target and then hits it with a melee weapon attack, it deals an extra d6. And so basically when they rush, do the rush dive, it deals a little extra damage to whatever attack they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what the attack is. The Wind Lance will be their new weapon. It has a reach of 15 feet.
Ooh.
Making them the fact that they fly even more terrifying.
Yeah, you can't
because
even...
now they don't have to get within melee range to stab you.
Mm-hmm. That's really good.
Which means they can now dart between multiple targets if they choose, right?
Yeah,
for sure. And their area is very large now.
Right? Because I think their fly speed is 60.
Could be, yeah.
I don't remember.
Pegasus are pretty fast, so
Then you're going to give them a new reaction ability called the Wing Beat. When an enemy the Squire can see hits it with a melee weapon attack, the Squire beats its wings, and each creature within 10 feet of it must succeed on a DC 13 strength saving throw or be pushed back 10 feet and be knocked prone. Mm. After beating its wings this way, the Avian Squire can fly up to half its speed.
Oh, wow.
So now here you got a guy who can fly around, stab you without getting close enough for you to stab back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do manage to get close, he can throw him his wings and knock you prone. That also means if you're flying in the sky, you're in trouble. Because you drop, I think, quite a bit of distance if you're not prone while in the sky, right?
It doesn't feel too good.
Unless you, of course, have the hover feature.
Yeah.
Or flying magically.
Or flying magically.
From, like, something that isn't you being with wings. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Because if it's not you directly flying, then that would imply that you...
Because now we had to cover that with my winged boots.
Yep.
Ah, we did. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, other than that, it's all about mobility. So
it is. It's pretty straightforward, which is fine. I mean, it definitely does its job really well, especially with the 15-foot lance. I mean, it's not actually 15 feet. I imagine it has, like, a little bit of, like, a wind extension, that another 5 feet.
Yeah, the idea, I think, is the whole thing is supposed to be made out of wind.
Oh, it's is it? Oh, okay.
It's a small, pointy twister. Okay. At least that's what I was thinking in my mind when I designed it.
No, that makes more sense. That makes sense. I like it.
That'll do it for our monster variant, the Avian Squire.
Pretty good one. I like that.
Ian, would you like to...
cover our encounter on the podcast?
Yeah.
I'd be happy to.
While I do this.
Mm-hmm.
Our encounter on the podcast is Chained Roots. Just outside a small village is a massive, withered maple tree. In a circle surrounding the tree, there are 5 stones with rune carvings and a large hole bore through the top. Through the hole runs large black chains that stretch out like spider webs and are twisted around the tree's trunk and branches at the stone circle's center. Ooh, that's not creepy at all.
Yeah.
A single village guard stands watch.
A successful DC 16 intelligence arcana check reveals the inscriptions on the stone to be components to a binding spell.
Huh.
So something not so friendly is being kept there.
Yes, so something is not supposed to leave.
A successful DC 19 nature check reveals the tree is actually a tree ant.
Oh, that makes sense.
A character with a passive perception of 13 or higher spots several cork spouts in the trunk of the tree.
Hmm.
Long ago, the locals hired adventurers to deal with a evil tree ant that was attacking their new village. The adventurers bound the tree with magic. Since then, the village has prospered by selling a delicious and rare commodity, maple syrup.
Yes.
They drain the syrup from the bound tree ant and sell it in their shops. The syrup is magical.
Makes sense.
Anyone that eats the magic syrup as an action gains 1d4 temporary hit points for an hour. And the syrup provides enough nourishment to sustain a creature for a day.
Wow, this syrup is incredible.
This is good stuff.
Yeah, it's really
a DC
good stuff.
16 intelligence history check. The characters recall this area being a large forest. The trees were chopped down and the village was built. The truth is that the tree ant was the guardian of the forest. His name I can't pronounce, so I'm not going to bother. He had an agreement with the villagers' new arrival and provided them with land to build their village. He understands the nature of life and decided it was best to mitigate the danger with an agreement. But after a few hundred years, the villagers expanded their town and territory and began to clear more woods than was given permission.
By Acorn Snarl.
Acorn Snarl.
It says Akron.
Shit. Yeah. Akron Snarl, then.
After further negotiations failed, Akron Snarl couldn't handle the loss of his trees and attacked the village. If the characters choose to investigate, they can find books, old folk tales of the original, and tales that tell of the original agreement. Should they awaken Akron Snarl from his prison, he is vengeful, no crap, and is filled with sorrow as his forest is no more.
I imagine he probably would go after a lot of people and kill them.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with that.
Seems like he has legit beef, even if these people aren't necessarily the ones who did it. By that, I mean, like, they're the descendants of the people who were trapped, and they may not necessarily know what happened either.
Yeah, imagine, like, you're being bound, you're a humanoid being bound, and you're just in a group of vampires, and they just feed off you for generations. That's essentially what's happening here.
Yeah, yep. It is.
It's pretty, except it doesn't, here's the weird part, because it's a tree ant, and
they live
we're
a
the
while.
Humans, it's like, is it different?
No, it's not.
Would the players assume that?
That I don't know. But that's exactly. All part of the moral ambiguity of this encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that knows, I love that shit.
Oh,
so...
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I like that. That was... Oh, man. I like how it says evil with quotes. Because that makes sense.
It also made me flashback to, I don't think people realize how much tree sap it takes to actually make maple syrup.
Like, a lot. You're draining its blood, basically, so...
You actually need 50 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup.
That's ridiculous.
That's insane.
I'm not kidding.
How many trees does it take to make that?
A lot.
How many trents?
I know that just because
how many trents?
Oh, I know that because I'm from Shepherd, and we have the Maple Syrup Festival every year, and we have maple trees around town. That's what we tap, so...
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I thought this was a fun encounter idea.
Yeah.
It really fit in. I want to thank our patrons for helping me flesh it out a little bit. I gave them an idea, and they gave me some extra details and stuff.
I like it. Sounds good. So we have the magic item of the podcast, which is the Frigid Whetstone. A weapon honed with this translucent blue crystal whetstone becomes coated in a magical icy frost. So it's a wondrous item, and its rarity actually varies. It's not actually set in stone. Get it?
Okay. I see what you did there. It's not set in whetstone.
As a bonus action, you can touch this whetstone to a melee or ranged weapon, which I thought was a nice thing. The weapon is imbued with with ice magic that erupts from the weapon for 1 minute. The frigid wisps of frost dance from this weapon. While the weapon is imbued with magic, it deals extra damage based on the rarity, and its speed is reduced by 10 feet until the start of your next turn. This weapon counts as magical for the purposes of overcoming resistance and immunity to non-magical attacks and damage. You know, that little spiel where it's like, oh yeah, you can break through their defenses or something. The whetstone can only be used once, and after its power is consumed, it turns to ash. From Common, it's a 1d4. Uncommon is a 2d4. Rare is a 2d6. And then very rare is a 4d6.
The supreme frigid whetstone.
Yeah, the supreme frigid whetstone.
Whetstone supreme.
Whetstone supreme.
It's not freaking Taco Bell, you guys. Oh my gosh. What do you guys think?
I know you love your consumables, so of course that's pretty nice. But I was kind of surprised. I mean, it's simple, but I like anything that I just use and forget, and it just does extra stuff for me.
Yeah, it's pretty simple and straightforward. If you like this, consider checking out our, I have a, at critacademy.com.
We're talking about the potion generator?
Yeah, there's a potion generator that has something similar to this for magic items. It's a magic item generator.
And this
is some of the effects that are inside of there. So
there's also the in a previous UTT a long time ago, there was a little like wind emblem or something.
The Tempest one.
Yeah. Yep, and that it's very similar to this, so I thought that was really cool too.
Trying to go with a theme here.
Now there's gonna be a fire one. Maybe. Maybe. We've already done that one. I don't know.
No, but there's a flame tongue weapon already too.
It's not like we can't copy and paste this just to change the element either. So,
yeah. Well, that was the original thing. I almost didn't because it was so similar, but they both end up having a little bit different.
I always say there could be some differences. So. You could always like make it like the fire one could like shed bright light or something like that. Yeah.
We'll figure.
Whereas
it
like
out.
The wind one can fly. I doubt a fire one would make you fly. But I don't know, maybe.
I mean, the fire in one direction.
Yeah, the fire in one direction. Yeah.
This is a booster. That'll do it for our magic item, the Frigid Whetstone.
Cool. Nice and simple.
Our Dungeon Master tip of the podcast is deadly poisons. Now, given the insidious and deadly nature of poisons, they are illegal in most societies, but are a favorite tool of assassins, drows, and other real sinister types.
Dun-dun-dun.
But you can instantly make dungeons, traps, hazards, and environments far more deadly just by adding any of the poisons found in the DMG.
I remember you gave me the poison condition, and that was the worst.
Yeah.
I absolutely hated it.
So, for example, a simple or hidden pit trap that only is 10 feet isn't much of a threat generally. But if you coat that shit in oil of the Taggot, which on contact can knock a character unconscious for 24 hours... That little tiny 10-foot fall becomes a lot deadlier. Because what are you going to do if you're stuck sleeping for 24 hours?
What's going to eat you within those 24
hours? What's
going
to eat you? What's going to tie you up and drag you away and try to sell you into slavery?
What's going to dump oil on you and drop a match?
Wow, you
just
guys,
burn the whole hole.
Guys, yeah, your guys' brain's crazy. I wish I would have thought of the... Oh, hey, I caught him. Now let's light him on fire.
He's like, this will be nice and easy.
He's not going anywhere.
How about a mage's tower that may have rampant magic filling the air with arcane power? Using the essence of ether poison can really fill that...
I'm going to say, I don't know essence of ether. But it hurts. It sucks. It's a poison.
Yeah. I can't even look it up because I don't have my book or anything.
Yeah, I don't have my
book. But in either case, these are just a few examples of the ways to enhance the more simple and mundane traps. Like even the rolling boulder.
I almost died by that boulder because I got poisoned.
Put spikes in the boulder and poison them.
Well, you don't even have to do that. Some poisons are just on contact. You don't even have to hurt the person. They just got to touch it.
Yeah, you could just make like a little tripwire that is coated in the poison. Now their foot is numb and they can't move it very well. And then now they're getting hit by a boulder. Look, I'm just telling you, poison sucks.
What about on-contact handrails when you're using them to go downstairs?
You're like, oh man, this would be good.
Just fall asleep and then fall to your death down just, an endless stairwell?
You just crack your head into the floor and you're just dead.
Oh gosh, that's funny.
You gain exhaustion. Why? Not because like you're actually exhausted, but because you gained a concussion. That's kind of how I'm ruling it.
I'm not picturing like a contact poison on the floor and the ceiling. And on both the ceiling and the floor is a reverse gravity panel.
What?
Oh! Oh! Ah! No! That sucks! A lot!
Just stuck in it going up and down.
Yep.
It hurts, and I can't see, and I can't hear, and I'm numb, and I'm...
slowly just... dying.
And you take falling damage going up and down.
Oh, jeez. That's horrible.
I love it. So then the way to get by would be to hug the wall, the left or right wall. You're just crawling as you can feel gravity shift nonstop. That's funny.
So we asked what the essence of ether was.
Oh, yeah.
A creature subjected to this poison must succeed a DC 15 constitution saving throw or be poisoned for 8 hours. The poison creature is unconscious.
All right.
It's inhaled. So in an area with like a mage's tower where you've got the rampant magic filling the air and setting fumes, you know.
Like you just breathe it and you're just.
You smell a strong.
Yeah. And you're just like, you hear. Okay. The sound of what sounds like a helmet crashing into the ground. You realize that was your friend, Chiron.
What happened?
I don't know. Took a nap.
Also made me think of a DM who made it very clear to his players, you guys smell gas. The wizard, I guess fireball, when they got in combat. The DM, once again, you smell gas. Yeah, whatever, fireball.
Okay.
The whole house explodes and you all die immediately.
What did you do to the DM? What part of you smell gas did you not understand?
I told you 5 times. I really don't know. I even told you it smelled flammable. Like, huh?
That'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, Deadly Poison. And our player tip of the podcast is...
Don't be a dick!
And you can avoid dickitude by role-playing a gnome.
In quiet forests and remote woodlands, gnomes live out of sight and mostly beneath the notice of larger races.
They just don't measure up.
Yeah, it's kind of rough. Gnomes dwell in homes dug among the roots of trees, easily overlooked and cleverly concealed by camouflage and illusions. They are fond of the burrowing mammals that share their habitats, such as badgers, foxes, rabbits, chipmunks, and have a sense of kinship with these small creatures. Gnomes value a quick mind and the ability to come up with clever solution to any problem. They grow up on playful games and challenges and pretty much any other form of entertainment. The heroes of lore aren't barbaric warriors, but playful tricksters. Into adulthood, their games grow to pulling great pranks without being detected or sneaking into highly secure areas. They deflect both aggression and attention with humor, and they guard their thoughts with friendly laughter. What do you mean I stole that bag of gold? I think that was Larry. Guys, we need to go.
Damn it, Larry.
They are inventive and resourceful, although they have little interest in or aptitude for the kind of technology found in human cities. They have an innate talent for magic and a love for illusion, music, poetry, and story. Eager to see what the world has to offer and willing to be awed by its wonders, gnomes greet the world with open curiosity.
I really like gnomes. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're really like happy-go-lucky kind of like people.
Lucky. Just really. They got the lucky feature.
That's halfling.
Oh, no, that I was going to say, I think that's halfling, but.
That's way less funny than. It's not even funny at all, actually.
Not anymore.
But I've never played a gnome. I don't know. The small races don't tickle my dice, I guess. Not edgy and angsty enough. Where is my angel person?
They could be, though.
It could be, I guess, yeah.
Actually, what's really popular right now, ever since the Artificer came out, is it's not uncommon to show like gnomes be mechanically inclined. In fact, you can see that in some race.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So with the Artificer that gives you the mechanical creature, a lot of people have been using that thing as a mount. Anybody
makes
know?
Sense.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really smart, too. Like, that's another cool thing why, you know, you should play a gnome, I guess.
Yeah. And then you get to sound like this, and you go like, hey, no, that was a bee, that was the guy downstairs.
You can be Gnomeo and rescue Juliet.
Oh, my Juliet, I just wanted to save you.
Oh.
Don't worry, I'll take care of your father. Oh, no, that's Tybalt. What you doing here? Hello there, Gnomeo, I'm going to get you.
I think gnomes are underrepresented because most people will end up picking a halfling over the lucky feature.
I mean, that kind of makes sense, too. I don't know, but gnomes can be cool. I mean,
I feel like gnomes have been more than the butt of a few jokes here and there over the years.
Yeah.
Gnomeo and Juliet may have been a part of that. So I think maybe everyone has like a negative connotation to gnomes in general.
Yeah, but I think they're fun and they're playful. I think they make fantastic druids and bards.
I think they could be a hilarious rogue.
See, I think rogue is just...
Is it too on the nose? Oh, God. a warlock gnome made a pact with, like, a demi-fiend. He's like, oh, hey. He's like, oh, hey, Lewis, how's it going? He's
are like, you prepared to have
I
your
am the
now?
Eldritch being of death and I would burn hell.
Oh, it's just you.
That's really good.
He's like, oh, yeah, time to burn the world down. He's like, did you really summon me just to do this? Really? This is it? He's like, well, have you seen how tall I am?
A gnome gutting and threatening people and like, all right, I'm sure happy to see you today. I'm gonna gut your guts right out of your stomach.
And the guy's like, what are you talking about? He's like, go get him, Larry.
I'm Larry.
Oh. Huh?
All right. I think that'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by role-playing that gnome. That'll do it for our main our honor UTT. Tips and tricks. Before we close out today, we have another gift to give away. This compliments of Jeff Stevens.
A masked menace terrifies their region. The adventurers stumble into her scheme. The kidnapping of a famous performer named Devon Artis. Their mission is to deliver a ransom and collect Devon. And once again, this is compliments of Jeff Steven Games. The Scourge of a Nightingale, Part 1.
Yep. Who is our winner today, Ian?
Our winner today is Jersey Boyce.
Yay!
If you didn't win, have no fear, head on over to CritAcademy.com/Jeff Stevens and get more fat loots.
Yeah.
Before we close out, I just want to say we officially have merch now. We got some really cool shirts. One of my personal favorites is Game Masters Do It on the Table. There's another one that's got a really dope giant flaming skeleton chasing a small little archer, and it says you can certainly try on it.
Yeah.
And then of course we've got one that's got a wizard saying keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes. So
I like that. You can certainly try. That's probably my favorite quote they ever give us.
Yeah. So head on over to critacademy.com and maybe check out some of that stuff. We got a bunch of different things you can check out.
Mm-hmm.
Please join us on our next episode, where we'll be discussing Unearthed Arcana Subclasses Part 5.
I love discussing this stuff.
Which contains a new ranger.
Yeah.
And a new... Is it a monk?
Monk's one.
Yes, it's a monk. I couldn't remember the other
one. Ranger and the monk?
It's just the two right now.
Maybe it'll change.
And the monk is basically a stand user.
Yeah, they basically are all based on dragons. So
okay, cool.
Dragon themes. The ranger actually gets to get a drake
pack. Wait, I think something else. Never mind.
I don't know. I'm really excited. We'll talk about it next
dragon
week.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed the show and you want to help support us, head on over to CritAcademy.com. Follow us on social media. Subscribe on YouTube. Please do that. Takes one second. Hit that click to get notified, man.
It's not that hard.
Click subscribe. Click the bell.
Totally free, and it helps us a lot.
Yep. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
Yeah, it's totally free, and you can just print it out, put it on some cardboard, and you're good to go.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I think you just revealed to everyone that you've never actually looked at that product.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's not digital terrain.
Fuck. Oh, I thought you said it was digital terrain. That's
no,
why.
No, fantastic terrain.
Fantastic terrain.
Anyways.
That's different.
So, it's...
that one I do know. Hold on. Free. Wait.
You got the products mixed up. There we go.
Yeah, I got the products mixed up.
Nice
Hold
save.
On.
It save. Is free, so check it out.